There's sun power, gun power, atomic power, fun power, power power, flower power, go power, and low power. And if power's all they really understand, we take the power of the flower and the power of the dove. We put them both together and we love them to death.
This is Dave White's big idea, that we're going to start playing theme music through this really crappy old boombox that plays cassettes.
I think that's a great idea. And I think that when we execute it properly and you don't let the music die down before you start talking and behave more like a professional podcaster, everything
well,
is going to be
you're the one that
amazing.
Started turning the volume down. I didn't
right,
know
that's
what,
your
how
cue
that was
to start talking.
Go.
That's your cue.
Well, okay. Anyway, welcome to
Didn't choose that song.
Welcome to Linoleum Knife.
So you were, it was all up to you, and you balked.
I didn't know what you were doing.
You
I think
you
this
whiffled.
I think this whole thing is stupid, but you can let us know.
You know what's stupid? Stupid is when we sign on and we're doing this. Welcome to
But that's Linoleum. How the show starts. That's what people are used to. Turn that off.
Right? We're gonna have production value.
Why start now?
And if you're not gonna give us some songs at the beginning, like you had at the very beginning when we had
yeah,
music.
When it was deafeningly loud, and then people would turn their things down, and then we'd start talking, and it wouldn't be loud
this
enough.
This is the Michel Gondry version of doing it.
I see. We're sweeting the podcast.
Yes.
Fine. Anyway, welcome to the 25th episode.
Really?
Yes. Of Linoleum Knife, and we're still getting our act together, sort of. Anyway, across the table.
I know what I'm doing.
Yeah.
I made an executive decision this week about music.
Yeah, and it's
and
a dopey
I executed
one.
It.
Yeah, you executed it. All right. In that you lined it up against the wall and shot it, and it died.
Everyone's very happy with this.
That decision needed to have a blindfold and a final
cigarette.
This is going to
be very popular. And next week, I'm going to select the song.
Yeah, that's going to go over
back
like
and forth,
gangbusters.
Back and
I'm
forth,
sure.
It's going to be great. It's all going to be amazing to hear, and it's going to be surprising every week.
Yeah,
and it's going to be all cassettes.
Oh God! Anywho, across the table from me is Dave White.
I have great ideas.
Film critic of movies.com.
And you're Alonzo Duralde, and you were the film critic of What the Flick?
Yeah, that's right.
And
I'm doing a DVD column once again.
Oh, yeah, that's true. You
now
are.
For movies.com, a column called DVD Obscura.
And it's going to be every 2 weeks or every month or something.
Something like that. Well, we're still ironing that out. But the big news is that after months of saying it was going to happen, we have a Facebook page. Ta-da. Linoleum Knife Podcast has a Facebook page. So if you have not already, please go check it out. Like it. See the pictures of our mugs, the whole thing.
Yeah, Graham took pictures.
Our friend Graham from the futureshipwreck.com site.
Yeah.
Took photos of us doing the podcast a couple weeks ago, and now we have a page. So, yes, just we usually say this at the end.
You know what Graham told me?
What did he tell you?
That I was the best model.
Of all?
Of both of you. Of you and me, I was the best.
Well, that would make you the better model.
The best.
You can't have a superlative when you're comparing two things.
Yes.
English major.
Yes, you can.
No.
You were better than most other people, but I was the best of everybody.
Uh-huh. That's great. He tells you these things. Who knows why? Why encourage you? I can't imagine. Anyway, we usually say
I would like to talk about last week's episode.
Well, hang on. We'll get to that. We usually say all this at the end, but I want to say like us on Facebook. Check out our Twitter page, which is Linoleum Cast. And go to iTunes and give us a review, preferably a positive one, but more reviews.
Can we eliminate the ones that are negative?
No, we can't.
Why not?
Because we're not Yelp. We don't have that kind of control.
So why don't we?
So because it's the free market.
That's stupid. So don't review the show.
No, go give us a review, and
if you review us and you don't like us, then keep it to yourself.
Okay, fine.
Yeah.
Give us a positive review.
Tell your friends that you don't like us or whatever, but keep it off iTunes. It isn't like we're making a big We're not like we're making money.
We're not making
this.
A dime from this.
So if
so
you
far,
don't like so. Us and you're going to go online and be like, nah, 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 then, you know, screw Save you. It. Yeah.
You're not helping. Okay. Anyway, it would be nice if you like the show to go to iTunes and say that you like it.
If you do like us, go to iTunes.
We would
and say
we
how
would
awesome
be
we are.
Much obliged.
That We've already awesome. Nalen did that.
Our friend Nalen did, and Jason Fozzie Bear from the podcast, and I believe Adam Salverson, who's one of my Facebook friends, and that's it. So if you're out there,
and my mom,
I know. Yeah, so if we could get a review from someone who doesn't know us, that would really, I think, count a lot.
That is not negative.
But yeah, that too. But you know, we'll take what we can get.
I'll find you.
All right. So last week's show, you were out of town, and our friend Ryan Downey was kind enough to sit in.
I did listen. Thank you, Ryan Downey, for.
And you better not have anything negative to say about Ryan Downey because he.
No. You know what I have? I have only positive things to say about Ryan Downey.
Okay, good.
In all contexts on the show and in real life.
Yes.
And his lovely wife, Corinne, made really nice.
Who made popcorn for us.
Popcorn that I came home from Texas and I stuffed my face into the Ziploc bag of it.
Caramely,
nutty, pecan-y popcorn that was soft. The popcorn was soft. And I don't know how you can make, how that happens, because popcorn is usually not soft.
If you, depending on what you put it with a coating, will sort of do it. But it was delicious.
It was very nice.
So, what are your thoughts about last week's podcast?
Y'all are some nerds. Y'all, both of you, just nerded so
Look,
hard.
Look, just because we've read a couple of X-Men comics in our day, you know.
A couple of hundred each.
It was relevant to the discussion. It wasn't like we brought up.
Year.
It wasn't like, let's talk about X-Men lore in relation
to. No, it wasn't just the X-Men movies. It was all the movies. Y'all were stone cold super nerds for a whole 50 minutes. It was great. I totally enjoyed it.
That's nice.
It was
Thanks for the backhand.
That's not being negative at all. I appreciated it. You got the flower in my absence. You became your true self when I wasn't around.
It's because I wasn't having to smack down some Joker being all with his negativity and his sass mouth smart alecky attitude trying to keep me down. That's why. I was not a battered husband for once.
I also have to tell you about how both of you were wrong about beginners.
No, we're going to talk about that. We're going to talk about that later.
No, I'm talking about it right now.
Well, hang on. I was going to introduce this with an email that we got from a listener.
Do it.
Jeff from San Francisco writes two things of note. First, a few weeks ago when you were reviewing the Pirates of the Caribbean on Stranger Tides, Dave asked, why are we even reviewing this? No one wants to know about this film. Yes, thank you.
Of me.
And he says, there are times when I'm in front of the marquee with a group of friends choosing a movie and someone suggests going to see the big blockbuster. It's great to have the ammo you provide to be able to say, well, if you listen to Dave and Alonzo, you'd know that if you weren't over Johnny Depp as Sparrow in the first three films, you'll be sick of him 15 minutes into this one.
I hadn't thought of that before.
So thanks for that. Yeah. Mm-hmm. He says, questions. When faced with thumbs up or down, like having to say fresh or rotten on Rotten Tomatoes, do you have a hard time? This week, it was hard to tell if Alonzo and Ryan recommended Beginners or not. Are there any films that come to mind that have been really hard to thumbs
Beginners.
Up or down? Well, here's the thing. Neither of us particularly liked the movie, but we both said that you should see it anyway because we both liked...
It was a beautiful movie.
We liked Christopher Plummer's performance, and a lot of people whose opinions I trust, not you, but like, you know, Gray and Robert Abley, people like that were really raving about it. So I was like, okay, maybe it just didn't get me. Maybe you should see it.
So you trust
that was
Robert Abley and Gray before you trust me.
Basically.
That's really what you're saying there.
Yeah.
Beginners is a beautiful movie, and now you've already had what you want to say about Beginners all last week.
Oh,
you had an hour to say anything you wanted to about Beginners.
I get to chime in whenever I want. Don't even foster the illusion that I'm not going
to
butt in on this because I'm totally gonna.
I'm about to give you my perfect opinion about this.
Uh huh. Go ahead, Art Boy.
This is not a fakey, quirky indie movie. Mike Mills is telling you his real life story. It's fictionalized, of course, but he's doing it through his, you know, visual sensibility and his textual, you know, sensibility. And that probably didn't make any sense, but his insistence on using text a lot in various ways, as a designer and an artist and also as a filmmaker. I really appreciated that. I really appreciated how he works his design and art, you know, aesthetic into the filmmaking. And it's real. It's a real story, and it's deeply sad and lovely. And so, yeah.
Well, that's, you know, I'm fine that you think that, but I just think that being real doesn't excuse everything. And I think that
it's a well-made film.
I think that his aesthetic in this context plays as really cutesy and precious. And it's distracting from the story that he's telling.
I think it transcends that stuff.
All right.
I think that other indie films attach themselves to these distractions that are, you know, oh, she's got narcolepsy. You know what I mean? Like something like that.
Uh-huh.
And those are just like adorable, weird decorations mm-hmm. on those movies. But that's not what this is. This is a movie about him. He is that guy.
I know that, but that doesn't excuse
the
problems that I had with the film.
That his style is strange, and this very real moving story is filtered through his sort of strange style of storytelling. And in fact, a movie that you really liked, me and you and everyone we know, made by his wife,
yes,
Miranda July,
yeah.
No, she wasn't his wife when she made the movie, but they just got married last year. He actually, I think, tells stories in a more direct manner than she does.
Right, but I think that's part of the thing, though. I think with Me and You and Everyone We Know, there was a concerted thing from the beginning that you knew that this was going to be this kind of storytelling. Whereas and the way the characters are presented, the way the overarching narrative of the film is done in a certain way that... There's a very strong voice there. So, and it's consistent. Whereas this film, I felt like you would have these moments with Ewan McGregor and Christopher Plummer or Ewan McGregor and Melanie Laurent that felt really true and honest and unfussy. And then the fussiness would step in. He would do these sort of little distancing things. And so it kind of kept going back and forth. If he had picked one...
What distancing things?
The whole recurring thing about this is what the sun looked like in 1967.
I love that stuff.
Well, okay. If he did, then
great.
And
there was a reason for that stuff. That he was tying the past and the present together.
I know. But for me, it felt... It like what Steven Soderbergh calls when the director stands between the audience and the screen and waves his arms around. And that's what it felt like to me that he was doing. And so that's that, because I felt like there was an interesting story being told, his true story. I thought that there were some really good performances, but that he it was like he couldn't stop himself from adding all this filigree and adding all this sort of extra stuff that took me out of the movie over and over again. And so at the end of it, I felt like the whole thing was at a remove. Like he couldn't commit to the honest emotions that he was flirting with in this movie. And so he would kind of rush in and step back from those. And that's what annoyed me.
No, all that filigree that you call it is part of his honest emotion. It is designed to take you deeper into the movie and not out. And I think that you misread it.
Well, we disagree, but at least I'm not condescending to you and saying that you didn't get the movie. I'm not saying that you're a bougie art poser.
I choose to condescend to you.
By swallowing his garbage hook, line, and sinker. I'm just going to say that I guess we have a different opinion.
I choose condescension.
Yes, because you're a bad person. You're what we call on clean podcasts like this an AH. So let's move on to this week.
Let's talk about film socialism.
No, that's at the end. Okay. All right. You were not going to front load with all this artsy crap.
All right.
Let's Super 8.
Super 8.
Do
you know that when you go to the Grove, the farmer's market, at 7:30 in the morning to see a movie, the donuts at Bob's Coffee and Donuts are warm.
Ooh.
Yeah.
I love Bob's, and I don't think I've ever had a warm donut there.
That's because you go too late in the morning.
Apparently.
You go after 9 o'clock.
Yes.
But if the movie is starting at 8:30, like Super 8 did for me.
Which they don't usually do.
On Friday morning.
They don't usually start that early at the Grove.
I got to the Grove at 7:30 just so I could go have some donuts at Bob's Coffee and Donuts. And Bob's Coffee and Donuts is in the farmer's market.
Yes.
Which is connected.
Adjacent to.
Adjacent to the Grove. It was there for.
It was there first.
100 years before the Grove.
Excuse me.
For that. And the donuts are warm when you get there early in the morning. It's so great.
It's like going to Krispy Kreme when the neon sign is on, yes. Right?
Okay. Except it's cheaper than Krispy Kreme and better.
Okay, well, then we'll have to start going there early.
But I went to see, I was in Texas, so I missed all the Super 8 screenings. And I went at 8:30 on Friday morning, and it was me and like five other people.
Ah.
You would think, I was all thinking that maybe
yeah,
it would
might be full. Yeah.
Full. But yeah, it started at 8:30.
Well, 8:30 a.m. is pretty hardcore. I got to see it in IMAX, and I think in real IMAX, the Burbank AMC.
I don't know.
Because usually AMC IMAX is that LIMAX, but this seemed like the big kind. Anyway, I saw it with Gray and a bunch of and Chris Gore and a whole bunch of people.
I don't like IMAX in any capacity.
You know,
except Tron.
Except I was going to say
Tron Legacy and IMAX great in Tron. Is pretty rad.
Anyway, Super 8 and I had a really good time. I have to admit, like the first half of the movie was almost like. I didn't cry, but I was just like, I was so sort of swept up in the look of the film and the little period details. Because like the characters in the film, I was 12 years old in the summer of 1979.
I was a touch older.
So I felt like I was so the target demo for this movie as far as that kind of thing goes.
Right.
I have to say, I wish the whole movie were as strong as the first half was. I think once they get into the plot stuff, it lost me a little bit.
This is not a visual program because you cannot look at me shaking my head.
I liked it a lot. I recommend it wholeheartedly, and I really enjoyed it. Although I have to say,
that was me sneezing in 2011.
The further away I got that I've gotten from it, the less it's kind of stayed with me. Although reading all the reviews this weekend makes me want to see it again.
Mm-hmm. Me too. I can't even evaluate this movie properly. I'm going to sneeze again. Is there a cat in here?
No.
All right. I don't know if there were secret cats in this apartment right now.
Absolutely not. My eyes would be as big as Owen's if there were.
I'd be in the emergency room.
Indeed.
What were we talking about?
Super 8,
yes.
You can't even...
I can't evaluate this movie objectively because I was practically like beside myself with happiness during the entire, from start to finish. I don't know what you're even talking about with strong first half and weak second half. Like every moment of this movie had me like, yeah, 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 yeah. Like an excited 4-year-old and not, I understand that there are a lot of really stupid movies out there that are about like stunted development and made by people who apparently suffering from it and for audiences that are also suffering from it. Right. And I get that. And when I see a movie like that, I always recognize it and I always either like, you know, it either lives or dies by how much I respond and willing to. What's going on outside? Now there's people yelling.
It's Pride Day.
It's gay pride.
So there are drunk people parked on our street.
In the middle of the afternoon. Hear them? And they're fighting now.
Oh, good.
Let's just hold the mics to the open window.
Exactly. It's going to be much more exciting. A good rhubarb.
Happy Gay Pride neighborhood of ours. What movie were we talking about?
Super 8.
Yeah, okay.
Arrested Development movies.
Oh, yeah. This just felt like genuinely being transported back to childhood. Not in a we don't know how to grow up kind of way, but a genuine sort of revisiting
nostalgia
of childhood and.
But do you think it's as effective for people older and or younger than us?
Yes.
Okay.
I think that even if you weren't also 12 years old in 1979, I was 14. Yeah.
15.
Turning 15 in the summer of 1979. Even if you weren't that age, It's funny. The kids are fantastic.
Oh, yes.
The kids
all
are
great.
All newcomers except for Elle Fanning and
Zach Mills.
Right. They and there's another kid who's been in a bunch of stuff too. But they weren't. They're not child stars. The only one who's famous is Elle Fanning,
right? Who I did not recognize. Like I knew, I read at some point that she was in the movie.
How did you not recognize her?
Because she's all grown up. Like I always think of her as Phoebe in Wonderland, which I really liked, and right. Which is my DVD pick this week. By the way, I'm gonna jump the gun. My DVD pick this week is Phoebe in Wonderland, starring Elle Fanning.
And fine, then mine is Somewhere, starring
Elle Fanning.
Elle Fanning.
Okay, great.
There.
Which I didn't.
We just
see.
Did our DVD picks.
There you go. I didn't. I never.
I really like Somewhere. I didn't get around to Somewhere. Big Sofia Coppola fan.
So that's why. So I'm sure if I'd seen her, you know, the last thing I saw her in was The Nutcracker in 3D, which I'm trying to forget ever happened. And I don't blame her for. But anyway, I was not used to her seeing such a little lady. You know, I was used to her being younger. But yeah, I mean, Joel Courtney plays the lead. And
that kid's really cool. You know who my favorite was? The Firecrackers kid.
Ryan Lee and Riley Griffiths, who plays the director, the Super 8 director.
Yeah.
Was great. And Zach Mills, I've actually really admired his work ever since.
I've admired his work since Mr. Megorium's Wonder Emporium. I just think it's funny when you say, I admire your work, and the kid's like 12.
Well, because there are good kid actors and there are bad kid actors.
I know.
A good kid actor. He was also in Kit Kittredge and American Girl.
When we get to Judy Moody,
we'll talk about bad kid actors. But yeah, he was also in Kit Kittredge and American Girl. I don't know
if you would run into that kid at the supermarket and go, I really admire your work.
No, I would not. Because that would be creepy to go up to some kid and say, I admire your work.
It sounds funny in any context.
Well, you're entitled to your stupid opinions. That's what this show should have been called. You're entitled to your stupid opinions.
Keep talking.
I'm
drinking stuff here.
Yes. Super 8, I think it's really charming. It's sweet, it's exciting. The special effects are really amazing. That the train wreck is
that's the best train wreck I've ever seen in my whole life.
Yeah. And it's J.J. Abrams who wrote and directed and is himself, you know, you've read everywhere as Super 8 enthusiast, blah blah blah. You know, produced and did he write Cloverfield?
I don't remember.
Anyway, he's connected to Cloverfield, and there are similarities between that film and this one in that it's about, an alien big bad, as they say, and about, people who are capturing things through the camera lens, yada, yada, yada. And I'm a big Cloverfield fan, so I dug it on that level. There was stuff towards the end that I was kind of like, eh. But the ending I totally loved.
Oh, yeah.
And what's weird is everybody keeps talking about, the spoilers and don't give away anything. I don't feel like there's any big spoilers. I mean, it's a pretty straightforward story.
The reason they're saying that is because the trailers did such a, an amazing job of keeping the story from you while goading you into seeing it. Like, it was all mysterious. The trailers were really mysterious. And
this is one of the few non-sequel, non-comic book, non-adaptation of something else movies. What, All Summer? Is it the only big one? Yeah. I mean,
somebody on movies.com, a commenter said, you have to be a stupid seven-year-old to like it. And I was like, okay, well, that's what I am then. Because I loved it.
Yeah, and I'm sure the guy who wrote that comment was like a stupid 14-year-old.
No, that's the new thing with movies.com is that you have to have a Facebook account and you have to put your name and face on it. This is a grown person.
But you know, they haven't done
that. I think it's funny. I like that he said that.
But he's basically
saying that I'm a stupid 7-year-old.
Yeah, well, whatever.
I'm into that.
they haven't done that for the whole site though, because like you can comment on 8 greats and not be signed into Facebook.
Well,
but for you and Gray's,
they're
pages,
taking care of me and Gray.
Well, that's nice.
Yeah, it sure is.
I hope it spreads to the whole site.
No more.
I've written other stuff.
No more AHs.
So. Yeah. Incidentally, Dave, of course, you can always read his reviews of the week's new films at movies.com. Also at movies.com, speaking of movies we've talked about this week, I did a list of 8 great Parents Gone Wild movies hook into beginners and 8 great movies from a kid's perspective to go with Super 8. So check those out. Super 8's terrific. I definitely recommend it. If you
live in Los Angeles, go see it at 8:30 in the morning
and have a donut.
Warm donuts.
but now was it like Was it in the big house of the Grove at least? Yeah. Was it one of those little crappy small?
Yeah, ones? I even got to sit in the Statler and Waldorf seats.
Oh, nice. Okay.
They have these. They have these
two like balcony
two
sort of
balconies on the side kind of things at that, which is the only good thing about the Grove.
Pretty much.
Everything else about the Grove is horrible all
Look,
the time.
If I go to the, if I'm in the Grove and I don't have to see a movie in 3D and it doesn't smell like sewage, I feel like it's a win-win.
I have at least one like experience of ineptitude every time I go there.
Either at the snack bar or from the projection.
At some point in my experience at the Grove,
ticket buying
someone
somewhere
will be doing something stupid, or something will be breaking, or something will not be being accomplished.
Yeah.
You know, they opened it. It was big. It was fancy. And it has been in a steep, like,
decline,
80-degree decline.
Now, here's the thing about, like, movie theater chains. I will make an exception for the ArcLight, because I don't think it's gone in this direction.
The ArcLight's seats are in the process of breaking down.
Okay, well, then maybe them, too.
And they need to start replacing them.
Does every single company open, like, these big sort of showcase, showplace theaters, and then just let them rot?
Yes.
Because AMC does it all the time.
That is what is happening.
They open these great theaters, and then they just kind of slowly get crappier and crappier and crappier. And then they eventually close them, and they build another one, like, next door and blow up the first one or something. You know? I don't get it. It's like, spend the tiny amount of money required to do basic maintenance on this thing you've already built.
To hire a maintenance crew that works during the day. Or, you know, someone to clean things, you know.
Well, they
two projectionists for your 24 screen, you know.
Especially if you're doing digital, have somebody that works there that knows how to convert the projector from 3D back to 2D, so that when you're watching something in 2D, it's not all dark. Did you read that Ebert piece about that?
Yeah.
You know, just anyway. Ah, don't get us started.
everything is terrible.
Yes. Basically.
Judy Moody in the Not Bummer Summer
is not terrible. It's not great, but it's not terrible. The reviews have been blistering. I'm like,
my favorite
review.
I will say, first of all, that I did not despise this movie.
Yes, it was.
But my favorite review is from our friend James Rocky.
Yes, that was a good one.
What did he say? It was like a blast of corn syrup.
A high fructose corn syrup spray of something. Yeah. I forget. It was really.
How do we spell
it? R-O-C-C-H-I.
How do you spell his last name? Okay. Go read our friend James Rocky's review of this movie, because it's hilarious. He hated it so much that I appreciate, even if someone, you know, despises something that I don't despise, I appreciate, like, an energetic hate.
Well, yeah, no. They have some fun with it, and the verbiage is good. You know, I'm totally understanding. But
it's a movie for... Here's the movie for seven-year-olds. It is a movie for seven-year-old girls. And I said in my review, if you're a girl, a little girl, the pickings are slim.
Yeah, there's not much aimed at you.
Yeah. And so, you know, when something isn't absolutely hateful and rotten, that almost feels like success. And so...
This
movie is not hateful or rotten.
Yeah, I was not like dying to get out of the theater.
It's full of squealing and it's loud and here, it is assaultive.
I found James's.
In many ways.
I found the James's quote.
Okay.
For accompanying adults, the constant stimulus will be entirely overwhelming, as if you were trying to drink from a fire hose, pumping out high fructose corn syrup with the force of a typhoon.
Right on, James Rocky.
Yeah, and I, you know, to which I can say, well, yes, but. I've seen some loathsome children's films in my day. Again, I cite The Nutcracker in 3D. And this one was innocuous and kind of goofy, and I sort of liked the fact that it allowed kids to sort of behave a little bit badly and not, like, punish them for it and just be kind
of... Yeah, she didn't get punished at all.
No, you know, and just to be goofy. I kind of enjoyed it.
They went on a poop picnic?
They went on a poop picnic. If I had a seven-year-old niece, I would totally volunteer to take her, you know.
Sure. Yeah, it is not the worst movie in the world. It's about a little girl who is my kind of kid. Organized, makes lists,
yes.
Has activities planned, likes to be the boss of people. I appreciate a child who knows what she wants.
Dave White and his not bummer summer.
So she invents a chart of things that are going to ensure that she and her friends do not have a bummer summer. She's fond of speaking in homemade acronyms. What is it? ABCPs? Already been chewed peas?
Well, that's every kid says that.
This is, oh, does it? Do every kid says that?
Yeah.
I never said that when I was a kid.
You never heard of ABC food?
No, I've heard of ABC food, I guess. I don't know. Maybe I haven't. I don't know. It's not something I said when I was a child.
Okay, well.
We called it seafood.
Well, yeah, there's that too.
When I was a kid. You chew up your food and then show everyone that you've chewed it up. Yeah. I've done it to
you. Do you like seafood?
I've done it to you recently, as a matter of fact.
Yes. Yes, you have.
And
because you're a brain-damaged seven-year-old, like that commenter said.
So I appreciate, honestly, I do kind of appreciate a movie where
kids get to act like kids.
Kids get to act like kids and they chew up their food and show you on the camera, yeah. You know, and they go on poop picnics. So anyway, it turns out that all her friends leave town for the summer and that her parents have to go out of town for summer to take care of grandma. So they leave her in the hands of Aunt Opal, played by Heather Graham. Mm-hmm. And Aunt Opal is sort of a hippie chick.
Artist,
bohemian lady, blah, blah. And
what she lacks in babysitting skills, she more than makes up for in
adventures.
Exactly. Yeah.
And so they have like a series of, you know, things that they do.
Yeah.
They go to a scary movie and they
ride a really scary roller coaster.
Roller coaster. And it's a terrible, stupid movie,
but it's cute and it's funny.
It's blindingly colorful, like yes. In a way that is almost hurtful.
But you know what?
Since White Christmas I seen a movie this scorching.
Do you know what it's better than?
Say it.
Sucker Punch.
Well, yeah.
But as far as a movie with a female protagonist.
Tracy Morgan at the Ryman is better than Sucker Punch.
Well, fair enough. But no, I mean, I was not grinding my teeth and like looking at my watch and praying for death while I was watching Jimmy right, movie yeah, in the summer summer. I was
also
I
they gave us it. They gave us cookies.
They gave us cookies, which totally helped. But I totally
they
went
those
with
great,
it.
Terrible supermarket cookies too.
With the big gob of frosting
the
on
thick,
top.
The thick
where the frosting's as thick as the cookie.
Sugar cookie with the sugary thick pasty frosting on top
and,
that was blue. It turned your teeth and your tongue blue.
And juice boxes.
They also gave us juice boxes.
So, but yeah,
I had a great time. I was stoned on cookies.
Maybe
and juice
you should
box.
Be on a sugar high. Go have a hot donut and then go see Judy Moody. But no, I didn't hate it. I thought it was perfectly okay. And I thought the lead kid Jordana Beatty, who plays Judy Moody, was fun and
yeah. And
not like child actory, which unfortunately does not apply to most of
any
the other
child
kids
in
the movie.
Really, genuinely, almost like any other kid in that movie.
I thought the little girl in the glasses was okay.
She was fine.
But the boys are all like smile for the camera.
Grinning.
Yeah.
Grinning, insincere, fake child actor stuff.
Like they were going to burst into "You're Never Fully Dressed Without a Smile"
right.
any second. Yeah. So... not as bad as you've heard, Judy Moody, but really, if you don't know anyone under the age of 10, you probably don't need to see
it. You don't want to.
You do not.
If you're grown and you're not accompanying a seven-year-old, you don't want to go.
No.
Yeah.
Although it's weird because they're showing it at the drive-in. At
midnight or something?
Yeah. Because it's like...
Well, that's for rotten parents who bring their children out at that time of night.
All right. The trip is
we went to the drive-in when I was a little kid, but...
That was always the first feature.
That was always the first movie.
Well, it's the first movie and the third movie in this case. That's why.
See, but that's not right. You shouldn't be doing that. They would always show three movies at the drive-in when I was a kid.
Well, now you're down to two usually.
But they would show them increasingly in adult order. So, but you would watch.
So first, you get like
Sleeping Beauty,
Super Bug, Super
or
Agents,
Benji, or Herbie Goes to Monte Carlo, or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And by the end of the night, the grown-ups are watching Lady Sings the Blues,
Mako Jaws of Death,
and you are
asleep in your PJs.
You come
in
your pajamas, and then you go to sleep in the back.
Yeah,
and you were you're not fully asleep yet, so you get to hear the F words
right
at first before you fall asleep. But eventually, you do fall asleep.
Yeah,
because your parents are like, lay down and go to sleep. You know.
And you're like, why is Diana Ross tying off?
I mean, I didn't even know what tying off
I'm,
was.
I'm kidding, yeah. I know.
But, what were we talking about? Oh, the Judy Moody at midnight.
Yes.
That doesn't make any sense.
Well,
and if your children are awake at midnight, then you're a bad parent.
Yes, no question. Anywho, the trip opened this week in limited release, and I think it's also available on video on demand.
Really?
I think so.
Well, already?
Yeah.
Oh, nice. Okay.
That's, well, then, that's the thing now.
I know it is. Movies. I know it is. And that's why, you know, you should, if you're a 47-year-old man like me, my birthday was last week, you're going to love this movie because it is all about middle-aged guy anxiety.
Yes. Yes. You don't have to be 47 to like it, but I'm sure it helps.
Explain what it's about.
Okay. Well, it stars Steve Coogan and Rob Brydon, who are playing, quote, Steve Coogan, unquote, and, quote, Rob Brydon, unquote. If you saw director Michael Winterbottom's previous collaboration with these two actors, Tristram Shandy or A Cock and Bull Story, you'll remember that that movie was part Tristram Shandy and then...
But you didn't see Tristram Shandy.
So, I'm sure a lot of people did.
Most people did not see
it. No, but I bet quite a few.
It's awesome.
I'm sure you should see Tristram Shandy. Quite a few of our podcast listeners probably saw it.
Okay, yeah.
Anyway, much of Tristram Shandy is set behind the scenes of the shoot of Tristram Shandy with Steve Coogan and Rob Brydon sort of playing these alter ego versions of themselves that are like where Coogan in particular is, I'm hoping, a much bigger jerk in the, on screen and a philanderer and egoist and all this stuff.
But my understanding than he is in real he is life. Not. Actually a jerk in real
okay
life.
I met him once, but I was in passing.
I am told else. That he is not a horrible
so yeah
person.
So he's playing a horrible yeah. version of himself in this movie and Rob Brydon is sort of his like foil. So this movie is basically, and you don't have to have seen Tristram Shandy to get the trip. This is all just sort of background. So the trip basically has the Coogan as Coogan and Brydon as Brydon going on this road trip through much of England, going to all these little like bed and breakfasts and gourmet restaurants and having these meals and kind of taking the piss from each other and, you know, doing dueling Michael Caine impersonations. And it's really funny and really smart. And over the course of the film, you kind of get to see, like Dave was saying, there is a lot of middle-aged male anxiety on display here.
Well, that's what it's about.
But it's also about like how, you know, like I thought it was, I think I think there's an interesting, and it doesn't clobber you over the head with it, but it's the notion of like, when famous people are friends with other famous people, but who are either not as famous or famous in different arenas,
right.
How they interact with each other, how the public interacts with them.
Right.
That I thought was really kind of cool. But just, you know, just, I don't know, just the two of them doing their due, whether they were playing themselves or playing versions of themselves, or even if they were just playing, had they been playing like characters named Bob and Fred, they're just such fun to watch together. It's a really entertaining movie.
Yeah. I saw it last night and it's really funny and
see it on a full stomach because everything they eat in the movie looks great.
You need to not only see it on a full stomach because I did see it on a full stomach and I was still hungry mm-hmm. while I was watching it because you need to see it after treating yourself to dinner at someplace fancy.
And if you can someplace sneak fancy, something into the theater with truffle salt on it that you can eat while you're watching.
Someplace
the
fancy where the plate is just sort of like the food is like the decoration on the plate because that's. That's basically the kind of restaurants that they go to through the entire film where you're getting like, you know, scallops with some sort of like
foam,
ginger foam on top of it. You know what I mean? Stuff like that. And so I really want it. I wanted to eat every single thing.
Yeah, totally. I hope the DVD comes with like recipes or something.
You can't make that stuff at home.
Well, or at least
you this know. Is that molecular gastronomy okay. stuff. You can't make this stuff
or directions to the restaurants.
You got to be like Jose Andres to make
right,
that stuff.
Right, right. Isn't there a cookbook out of that stuff now? I mean,
I'm sure there
it
is.
It involves you having like a tank of liquid nitrogen in your
yeah,
kitchen.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I mean, I'm sure there is a cookbook, but it's if you buy it, then you right. better be like a
chemist.
A chemist and a professional chef gotcha. At the same time.
It makes the Momofuku one look like a oh, man. Walk in the park.
My friend Aaron gave me the Momofuku cookbook for Christmas, and I'm terrified of it. I open it up. I cook a lot. I cook a lot of stuff.
Dave is not easily cowed in the kitchen. With new recipes.
But I'm terrified of the Momofuku cookbook because everything is like you need five ingredients and he expects
and you
to go
make all
you
have of
to
the
go
ingredients.
Make all the ingredients. Like you need to go make your own like you
miso
know,
broth.
Miso broth, you know, and I'm like, I don't want to do that.
Your
I
own just, rice paper.
Right. Know? Yeah, exactly. And so I'm sure there are probably more than one
molecular gastronomy cookbooks.
Foam cookbooks out there. And I'm not going to, yeah.
Yeah, fair enough.
I make pork loin. That's what I make.
All right, speaking of the hard to digest, film socialisme.
Is it pronounced, you took more French. than I did. Is it pronounced socialism?
I don't think
socialism.
I don't think the E is silent. I think it would be socialisme. Something like that. Film socialisme, I think.
See. Is that how they say socialism in French?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
I think. I mean, we didn't, oddly enough, in high school French, we didn't talk a lot about le socialisme.
Why not?
Because,
but they're totally socialists.
We were learning
France.
About the bread and the
France,
pen
they
of
are
my
actual socialists.
The pen of
though.
My aunt. I know, but we weren't. You know, they one of the things that they
how
that,
would
that,
you not learn that word?
One understand. Of the things that the plutocrats in this country have succeeded at is making socialism itself a dirty word.
Yeah, I know.
And so yeah, so at my prep school, we did not talk about socialism.
Because they think it's communism, because they don't understand that words actually have definitions.
No, of course not. So I'm guessing it's socialisme. Anyway, film socialism, as it is called in English, is the umpteenth film by New Wave.
It is, in fact, the umpteenth.
Umpteenth, yes.
It is the umpteenth.
By master New Wave filmmaker Jean-Luc Godard. And
it's so great.
Jean-Luc Godard basically said adieu to narrative some time ago. And he's just off on a tear of whatever he wants to talk about. And here's what I was thinking of after I saw it. There's a line in like Watchmen, I want to say, or some comic I read where it's something along the lines of, how can we tell if the world's smartest man has gone mad?
Right.
You know, so with Godard, who has, his movies have gotten sort of odder and more disjointed and nuttier over the years, how can we tell if Godard is phoning it in? You know, because like...
Oh, he's not.
But I mean, like, basically, how can we tell if somebody whose work has already been so bouncing all over the place and jumping around from thing to thing, how can we tell when his movies aren't saying anything? Because to me, I didn't know if it was saying something, I don't know what it was. And to quote our friend Christy Lemire, who came over for Pancakes today... When she reviewed the film on TV, I'm not stupid. And I have no idea what he was saying in this movie. And well, I don't.
As a stupid 7-year-old,
yes,
I would like to say that I thought it was great.
Because, I mean, I could tell he was flirting with ideas about, like, the fall of society and things, and like, I mean, he was sort of focusing on different places on
I think
Earth
it was
there.
Like, in a way, it was like Notre Musique.
Which I also hated.
Earlier film. That I think, you know, well, here's what happens in the movie. First of all, you're on a Mediterranean cruise. With Patti Smith. And lots of people at a buffet. Many and shots of the buffet.
I would be much more interested in a documentary about how you got Patti Smith on a cruise ship and and what she did the rest of the time. Did she play shuffleboard? What was your line? Hey, Jean-Luc, we got a cinema downstairs.
Yeah, it's like, hey, Patty, do Because the Night.
No, but you're the... You're
hey, Jean-Luc. Bonjour, Jean-Luc. Want to go join us in the ship's movie theater? They're showing Who's Your Caddy down there.
They're showing Grown Ups, and Armand White said it's just like your friend Jacques Rivette.
Exactly. Instead of this cruise ship and people are at the buffet and Patti Smith is wandering around the deck strumming
and there's
guitar.
Maybe a Nazi war
people
criminal.
People are dancing at the ship's disco. There's a lady watching cute cats video on the internet and on the internet and meowing.
All the disco music is very intentionally distorted.
Yeah.
And all of the subtitles in the film.
This is my best. This is my favorite part.
Have been broken down to like three words at a time, kind
Gray?
Of pidgin English, which. I'm sorry. If the whole film if the film were like that in every country, then fine. But you have people speaking these long diatribes in French, and if you understand French, then you presumably know
French.
What they're saying.
Not just French.
Mostly Russian, French. There's a little Russian, there's a little German, but it's mostly
Greek.
French. Mostly French. If you do not speak French, you are SOL, because all you get are like
I think even
words,
if you do speak French.
Casino, doom, you know, like you get three words at a time. Like, well, thanks. Thanks, JLG, for nothing.
Even if you do speak French, you're SOL. Yeah. My favorite line, it comes from Gray.
Mm-hmm.
Gray hated this movie so much that her little tag, we have on movies.com, we have to do these little taglines that go next to the title of the movie. And I've had people actually think that we write three-word reviews.
And that's it.
On the site, yeah. Because they don't click through on the thing underneath that says see full review. And
they don't have time. They can't be bothered.
And so they think that that's our full review.
They want the foam of your
review. Here's Gray's...
that you're a molecular critic.
Her thing, yeah. her little tagline is absolutely not. And she says the subtitles all say nonsense, the number 15, and asleep. And but here are some examples of the subtitles, because I took notes and I put them in my review. In addition to only putting up 2 to 3 words at a time on the screen, after people have spoken for like 10 minutes at a time, he will then combine words, jam them together so that you have to separate them. You have to make that even extra leap and separate the words so that you realize it's not just one word. Like he writes,
here's one word. Here's an impersonation of this movie. I'll be what you hear on the screen, and then Dave will be the subtitles.
Okay. No crimes, no blood. Money, public water. Empire or tourism, no god.
There you go.
Ourselves, part of geography. Dialectical thinking. Free time, shopping. Humiliated by liberty.
Oh, God. Okay, so yeah, I think this movie is bollocks.
These are the grooviest bollocks that I've seen all year long. I like it because it stubbornly defies making any sort of sense. I love it because the entire second half of the movie is set suddenly no longer on the cruise ship, but in a gas station where there is a llama and a donkey hanging out, tied up for no reason. Mm-hmm. Except I think that any donkey in any French movie is Balthazar.
From and I think it's intentional. Balthazar.
I think that's what he's. I think he's referencing.
I think Balthazar. You're. I think you're reading way too much into it. Okay. Let me ask you the question that Christy Lemire asked Ignati, which I thought was a valid one.
Okay.
If this were not a Jean-Luc Godard film, if it were just this DVD that landed on your desk,
yes,
would you look at it and go, "Oh my God, this is brilliant"?
That is a good question, and here's why I don't have a good answer for you. Because I know it's a Jean-Luc Godard movie, and because I know what direction he's been going in for the past like 15 years, and I know that for him, this is enough. This is, you know, what you get from him, and if you don't like it, tough. And that if you are not going to make giant leaps with him, then he doesn't care if you do or not.
Okay, so, are you giving him a pass for the rest of his career then?
I am saying...
Are these the later REM albums that we have to like because we liked Murmur?
Speak for yourself on that. Because I think that REM is doing the opposite. They are making themselves more visible and linear traditional.
But what I'm saying is, does even if his films get more and more... Or I should say less and less, like, understandable. I mean, just become more of a freak out. If he releases 90 minutes of Color Bars eventually, does he get a pass?
Gary Charman released a movie that was all blue screen.
Yeah, but that was a movie about textured dialogue, and he made it because he was losing his eyesight to AIDS.
I know.
So I guess what I'm saying is, does he get a pass forever now, no matter what he does, because he's a Godard? Could you see a Godard movie and go, that's ridiculous? Or is everything he does now okay
thing? The new thing is poo-pooing all the stuff he did in the 70s.
But him or doing it or other
critics?
Oh, okay.
Critics.
I don't really know his 70s films.
And so the...
have you seen any?
The Jane Fonda documentary.
Ugh, that was terrible. And the movie that he made with her is pretty bad too, but that's still late 60s, I think.
Yeah, it's early 70s. In any case, it doesn't matter.
I'm going to go to the tote.
It doesn't matter. What matters is that this is not a movie that has a plot. This is not a movie that has a narrative.
No, and that's
fine. This is a movie that is a collage of images.
And that's fine too.
And as a collage of images, it is a collage of awesome images. It is like... Almost like you
didn't find it repetitive?
Yeah, I did. But it's like a condensed history of images. Everything from old-fashioned sort of like, here we are in one spot and we're pointing the camera at one thing, to YouTube and everything in between. Mm. And so it is some of the most beautiful blackened images of ocean that I have seen in forever. And
you're right, by the way, Tout va bien is 1972.
So. I believe I was in second grade in 1972 and was a big fan of Tout va bien at that time.
He barely made anything in the 70s, oddly enough, and that's the only one I've seen, and I don't like it. So, I guess I'm also poo-pooing his 70s.
I believe that in general what this movie is about, if it's about anything, it's about how, you know, the things we have built, governments and financial structures and cultural myths and wars and art, they make us and they wreck us at the same time. And whether we like it or not, we are kind of trapped in that stew of stuff that has been built before us by people with more power than us. And we're kind of screwed. And I think that's what he's saying. It doesn't matter if I'm right, really. And I just like the fact that he's still making movies. He's 80, and he's still making movies. He's making nose-thumbing movies. And I see so much generic garbage all year long when a guy who with a history of being antagonistic and challenging comes along and says, here's my new thing, what do you think? And you don't get it, then it's fine. Because at least he spoke a little bit to me. You know, it's like every year I know I'm going to get a Woody Allen movie. And it's half the time going to be awful. And half the time it's going to be Midnight in Paris, which I liked. So if Jean-Luc Godard wants to make a movie every year from now on until he's 100, like Manuel de Oliveira, and still making movies, fine. And if I don't get it all the way, or if I don't get it even half the way, if it's just something really great for me to look at, fine.
Yeah,
I'm happy.
Here's the difference, though. Like with my REM analogy, you will say when a Woody Allen movie is crap, you will look at something like You'll Meet a Tall Dark Stranger and whatever works, and you'll say that's garbage.
Woody Allen makes movies with conventional narratives.
Okay, well, I just don't feel like that because...
Why should I have to impose a structure on him?
On Godard?
Yeah.
Because you're a film critic.
If he's not going to do it for himself, or maybe he is doing it to himself and I just don't see what he's doing. That doesn't mean I don't enjoy myself.
So basically, because he's oblique, you're going to give him a pass no matter what he does.
I'm giving him a pass because I love Anna Karina so damn much.
They got divorced a long time
ago. I don't care.
Ago.
They should have made a baby.
Look, I love Gene Seberg. That doesn't mean I give Jean-Luc Godard a pass on everything. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Okay, so that's what it boils down to. Because he's not operating in straightforward narrative, and because he may be doing something that makes sense only to him.
Because he's friggin' Jean-Luc Godard.
Yeah. You're gonna give him, okay,
yep.
All right.
Yep.
So that's where we are. I am not that generous to him, and I say this movie is Le Pew.
Le Pew.
Le Pew. all right, so we've already done our DVD
picks. I also saw Troll Hunter.
Oh, yes. Okay. Which is also opening in a few markets and on video
about
on demand.
A giant troll. Many giant trolls terrorizing Norway. They are big monsters. Mm-hmm. And I'm a big fan of big monsters.
And they need a big cereal.
If a movie has big monsters in it, I am more likely to like it than I would if the movie does not have big monsters in it.
I'm with you.
And this movie has big monsters in it. And it's not terrible. It's going to be terrible when Chris Columbus remakes the American remakes it in America.
Heard about that.
Because that's what he's doing. Mm-hmm. So see the Norwegian one and enjoy the lo-fi sort of cheapo, and you know, big monster-ishness of it. And if you're a fan of big monster movies, and
am I going to have to watch all three of those Stieg Larsson movies before we review the David Fincher ones?
Is he going to do all three?
That's the plan.
Is that true?
That's unless something disastrous happens with the first one.
I enjoyed those three in descending order.
Okay.
The Girl with the Dragon Tattoo is fun, and the rapiest movie I have ever seen since like I Spit on Your Grave.
Hey.
And then the other two were good and whatever. Mm. You know what I mean? Like the second one, I was like, yeah, I like the second one. And then the third one, I was like, can we just be done? Like, can we just get
this done? I believe the plan is for Fincher to make all three.
Okay.
Unless it's like the Golden Compass, where the first one tanks and then they don't do anymore, but I don't know if that'll happen. Right.
Like Atlas Shrugged. Why can't there be part two of Atlas Shrugged?
Hey, look, really we're getting the Sarah Palin documentary next month.
I'm so excited.
Undefeated.
I'm so excited.
Except
about
that. For that time that I was defeated.
I'm so excited for the Sarah Palin documentary. I really can't wait.
No, that's...
I wish they would show that at the drive-in. Then I would. That would be like the best drive-in night ever. I know that I'm part of the problem by loving
hating her.
By loving hating her so much. But so what? I know that by giving her attention, she keeps sticking around. And eventually we'll stop paying attention to her. I mean, we stopped paying attention to Paris Hilton.
True.
And she's doing her thing, but no one really cares.
Right.
She owns a football team or something, a rugby team or a boat, a sailing team.
A cycling team.
She owns some kind of team in Italy or whatever.
Motocross, I think.
Yeah, she owns a BMX troop or something. I don't know what she owns. Eventually, I think Sarah Palin will just, you know, be a talking head somewhere.
Yes.
If she becomes the president, then we're just going to accelerate our plan to moving to Madrid.
Yes.
As soon as possible.
We'll be refugees.
Since that is part of our old age life plan. I'm stoked for this documentary. I can't wait to see how butt-ass dumb she is over and over and over again.
Even though it's going to be edited as flatteringly as possible. So on her behalf, it's still going to be loony.
It doesn't matter. You can edit her in a way that you think is flattering because you love her so much, and she still is a moron.
No, yeah, no question.
Yeah. So, yeah.
Alrighty then. All right. Well, folks, we do appreciate you tuning in. And once again, Facebook.
Yeah, we're on Facebook now.
Page,
perhaps Linoleum you've
Knife
heard.
Podcast. LinoleumCast at Twitter. A quick shout out to our fellow podcasters, Popcorn Mafia. The Comedy Couch with Dennis and Tony, Secretly Timid, Blowhard, the Podcast,
so
and
many of them.
The Criterion Cast.
Stuff.
So go check those out. They're lots of fun. Anything else?
Goodbye.
Bye.